old man with a sugar in through. And what can you be looking for here? Well, son, now we're going to start brewing sour beer.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. And that catchy tune is Sap Beer by John Castle. It highlights one traditional use of the sap from the maple tree. There's a lot you can do with maple, though, beyond the traditional. If you don't want to go out on a limb too much, you could try a maple vinaigrette on your salad or a maple smoothie or pastry. But once you've gone that far, why not try salmon with maple glaze or chicken thigh hot pot or even a pad thai with a dash of maple? Our guest today, Katie Webster, has tried it all, and she's collected 100 recipes into a new cookbook. This Vermont food blogger, recipe tester, and former food stylist joins us today to talk about how to make maple part of your culinary repertoire for sweet and savory dishes. Katie, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you actually have brought two dishes, and I can't wait. I can't sit here in front of these any longer and not try them. So what did you bring today to bring out this flavor of maple?
So I brought two. I brought something savory. It's the smoky and sweet turkey chili. And this is one of those recipes that since I came up with it, I've made it more than I could count. So I made it last spring during sugaring season, and I put it into a crock pot, and there were all sorts of people there to help out, and I served it to them, and I've made it on weeknights, and so now I've brought it with me today.
And what's the maple adding to it?
So it adds a little bit of sweetness and just sort of rich complexity, sort of a little bit of a caramely note, and it balances out that smokiness. So you're probably tasting a little bit of the smoked paprika and the chipotle, and it has fire-roasted tomatoes in it. So the smokiness and the maple together really balance each other out. Is it too spicy?
No, I love spice. I was going to say, actually, that one of the nicest parts is it has this bite to it.
Yeah, yeah.
But yet it has that nice sweet flavor. Yeah. So there is that smokiness, that bite, and then that little bit of sweetness that just sort of blends it all together and makes
right.
you feel like you're not just biting into a pepper.
Right. And then I also put in some red wine vinegar.
And that little acid.
Yeah. So that sort of balances the sweetness and then the salt as well. So it's sort of like a play on all those different tastes.
It's really delicious.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I have to say, we did a chili cook-off show a while ago, last year, earlier this year, actually. And we learned all about the power of acid in your chili and how important it is.
Yeah. And so, and then I've also put some toppings on here. I put some fresh avocado and some toasted pepitas, they're pumpkin seeds, and then some cilantro. And I just do that just to make it look pretty and then also for texture contrast and freshness.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you could put whatever you want on top, you know, red onion or sour cream.
Cheddar,
of course.
Well, you are a former food stylist, right? So that presentation is important
to
you.
You eat with your eyes first. So I always try to make things look pretty.
It is beautiful. And the photographs in this book are beautiful, too. And
Thank you.
Those were all ones that you styled for this.
Yep. I took them. I styled them. I cooked them, put them on a plate, and then got out my camera and took pictures of them all.
You did it all.
Yeah.
Listeners, I want to invite you into this conversation. I'm sorry you can't try this smoky and sweet turkey chili, but you can actually find the recipe for it on our webpage. Katie has shared a recipe for that and for a tort that we also have sitting in front of us. That's going to be our dessert a little later. So you can find those recipes. Go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition. But I'd love to hear what you use maple for and what creative uses you've found for it. So there's all of that traditional pancakes and sweet stuff. But are you using maple on fish? Are you putting it into other dishes that you think we should know about? Or maybe you have a question about flavor profiles and how to incorporate maple or how to substitute maple when a recipe calls for other sweeteners. Whatever your question is, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post your questions on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Katie, we were trying to figure out earlier today, what might not go well with maple? Is there anything you've ever found that doesn't pair with maple?
Well, it's actually interesting. I'm a chocolate lover. I eat chocolate pretty much every single day. And I was so bummed to learn that a lot of the ideas that I had for the dessert chapter that included chocolate didn't work the way I wanted them to. The chocolate really overpowered the subtle, natural maple flavor. And it was a constant struggle. So I made these chocolate chunk cookies with walnuts. And I used maple sugar, granulated maple sugar. And the chocolate just totally masked the maple flavor. But then I tried it with white chocolate chips, and they were amazing. And you can really taste the maple. Chocolate, unfortunately, not doesn't play that well with maple. And then the other thing, I mean, you can, of course, use it with the maple, but it masks it. The other one is citrus overpowers it as well. I actually found that it was a really interesting thing how it would how it worked with other flavors. I think it's really a complex flavor, so I thought it really surprised me a lot.
I was told a story this morning, though, about a cheesemaker that was trying to do a cheddar, maple cheddar flavor, and they said that did not work. And our producer,
I guess
Sam,
I'm not surprised about that.
Well, and Sam, our producer, is trying to weigh in here with all of his takes on what could be totally gross with maple. He suggests maybe sardines. Do you think you could do a maple and sardine dish?
Oh, gosh. Please. No, I don't think you can.
How did you test your recipes and come up with them?
So I basically, you know, started just by writing the table of contents. And I said, okay, so I want to do some breakfast, obviously, and I want to do, you know, appetizers. And wouldn't it be fun to put in some cocktails? And then from there, I cook seasonally. And so I basically filled out each chapter, making sure that there were ingredients from the various seasons. I took ideas that inspired me from, like, things that I'd tasted out and about in restaurants or seen in magazines, and sort of tweaked them and changed them and put different things together.
And when you had some of the traditional ideas, the things that are either, you know, the pancakes or the pastries, mm-hmm. or as you mentioned, glazed carrots is sort of a traditional one with maple, did you come up with your own recipes, or were you just sort of remembering what you've grown up with?
They're all original recipes. With the exception of the pure candy. They all are ideas that I came up with. So, for example, like, there's a carrot ginger soup. So for that recipe, I sat down at my computer and I said, okay, let's call this carrot ginger soup. And then I start cooking the recipe in my head, and I type it out, and I say, okay, so how do you start every soup? You put oil into a pot, you add onions, and I basically type it up and print it out. I call that my hypothesis draft. And then I take it into the kitchen and I cook it, and I usually change it as I go and make tons of notes all over it. And then I change things. I say, okay, well, that definitely was really flat. I think I want to add some acidity, or you couldn't taste the maple. I need to back off on the ginger. So then I edit it, print it out again, and go back in and test it again. So, through that process, I come up with, you know, a unique recipe. So the idea of a carrot ginger soup is not a new and novel idea, but this recipe is one that, you know, I came up with on my own. So that's how all of the recipes came to be. Once I finished, you know, that part of it, then I'd pass it off and a cross tester would test it for me as well. So each recipe got tested over and over again, probably an average of, you know, 5 to 7 times.
I was recently reading about one cookbook author who said, oh, I've got a couple of testers, but one of them knows me so well that she knows what I'm talking about when I give her a recipe, and she can just make it the way I would. So she had to find another tester who might make things differently or who wouldn't understand her language as well. Did you find that you had to find testers who maybe aren't as good at cooking as you are to try to make sure you were doing it right?
That's so true. So I had two women who are professional testers, one of whom went to culinary school, the other one who is a home cook who does this, as her profession. And so after I was finished with the recipes, I would send it to one of those two, and then they would send it back to me, and I'd edit it. And then I would put it out to – I had a team of 12 volunteer testers, and they were all home cooks. And I would try to get one or two of them at least to test each one. So, you know – yeah, I tried to make sure that I was getting a lot of feedback from various people, but you do get to know your testers and what their tastes are.
We're talking today about cooking with maple. If you want to share your maple recipes or how you like to incorporate this local sweetener into all kinds of foods, post your recipe, post a note, post a photo, go to our Facebook page and post it there, or call 1-800-639-2211. Dan in Stowe says, Jane, put some maple syrup in your next cup of coffee. Delicious. It's true. Maple syrup is pretty good in coffee, or especially a latte, or maybe just steamed milk. A steamed maple milk is to die for. Clayton is calling in from Burlington. Hi, Clayton. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
Great.
Hey, I'm just calling in. It's more of a comment. And as somebody who loves spice and maple syrup, I kind of discovered this game changer, maple sriracha. It's actually made in Rutland in small batches. And my favorite thing to use it on this past summer was corn on the cob.
Mm.
And it's I know it's a little late for that, but it's something to look forward to. And it's now sold at like City Market, Healthy Living, and around the state.
Clayton, when you put it on something like corn on the cob, does that maple flavor shine through all of that spiciness of a typical sriracha?
It does, and it's so well balanced that I probably put it on things I shouldn't, just to use it as much as possible. But the maple does shine through, and that's the kind of the beauty of it being combined with something like sriracha.
Thanks for that tip. Appreciate it. Katie, anything that you can think of that sort of from your book maybe that you that flavor profile works with?
Well, I think it's really interesting. I saw this this sriracha that you're talking about, and I'm thrilled about it. I think of maple and sweeteners in general as being a spicy enabler. So you can definitely get away with adding more heat to a recipe, more spice to a recipe when you add sweetness. So there are a lot of recipes in this book that have spice and maple sweetness together, and they do really wonderful things together. I love the way chipotle chili, which is smoked jalapeno, I love the way that works with maple. Something about the smoke and the sweet and the heat together is really just a wonderful combination. I have a flank steak recipe where it's marinated in chipotle, and then you grill it, slice it, and make it into tacos.
Oh, that sounds delicious. We got a note from Janice, who shared a recipe for maple roasted cherry tomatoes with us, and that's on our webpage. She says this makes a wonderful topping for small crostini or crackers, perhaps spread with fresh ricotta or goat cheese. I think it would make a delicious sauce for pasta, too. I can't remember where I first came across this combination, she says, but I cannot take credit for it. But you can get it on our webpage. And Mark and Charlotte wrote in with a Vermont mojito, which sounds amazing to me. Gin, he says my favorite is Bar Hill, which is local. And then 1 ounce of maple syrup, juice of a lime, 8 to 12 mint leaves. Blend it, but don't make it into a slushy. And he says, I know mojitos are usually made with rum, but the dryness of the gin offsets the sweetness of the maple syrup. Katie, you have a lot of great cocktail recipes in your book. I'm wishing that we could have some of those today, too.
Yeah, I couldn't help myself. I put some... there's a few different seasonal choices. So in the summer, there's a peach old fashioned. And then I have something that's in season right now is the Maple Meyer Lemon Whiskey Sour. And actually, my husband has declared that out of all 100 recipes in the book, that that's his favorite one.
Really?
yeah. And we have a maple teeny and a maple margarita. So there's something for each season. And then there's, of course, the the non-alcoholic beverages as well.
Yeah, I was pleased to see you included some of those. There's a punch. There's some spritzer type things in there.
Yeah.
My favorite cocktail with maple is actually to use the Vermont Gold vodka, which is made out of maple sap and some maple syrup, seltzer water, and some pomegranates to add color.
Oh, that
and
sounds
it's
good.
Just this beautiful wintry, you know, if you put it in a beautiful glass, delicious and beautiful to look at, which is my favorite combination.
I know what I'm having this weekend.
Let's go to Jim calling in from Morgan. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. How are you doing today?
Great. What about you?
I'm fine. I wanted to make a comment about your reference to sardines. First of all, I'm a sugar maker in the Northeast Kingdom and also an aficionado of sardines. And there's a company out of the great state of Maine that makes a lovely maple sardine. They package their sardines in maple syrup, and they're quite delicious.
You have got to be kidding me.
Absolutely not. You can find them at many of your more specialty food stores. I purchased them at a couple of places in the greater Burlington area.
And you like them? Do they actually work packaged in maple?
Oh, it's great. They're very good. They're very good.
Oh, Jim, thank you for setting the record straight. So apparently maple even pairs well with sardines. That's amazing. I'm really appreciative that you called in. Let's go to Betty in Waterville. Hi, Betty. Go right ahead.
Hi, your recipes sound delicious, but I was wondering, what is the ratio of maple syrup to sugar for recipes?
Oh, I'm glad you're asking that. So basically, when you start doing what you're asking about, where you're subbing in maple for white sugar, you just have to go into it with an open mind, because it's not necessarily going to be a straight up easy expected result every time. But there are some general rules of thumb to go by. So for I would say for your first attempt to do probably about 3/4 cup of maple if the recipe calls for 1 cup of white sugar. But then you also need to back off on your other added liquids. So if it's for a baking recipe, this is important. So you basically want to drop down your other liquids by about 3 tablespoons per cup of maple added.
Okay, and so that'll give you a little bit. It won't be too watery, but you're using a little bit less maple, because maple, why would you need less maple than actual white table sugar?
Because it's sweeter cup for cup. So you don't need as much. It also, maple also browns more quickly. So if you're, you know, baking a cake with it, it's the outside of it is going to brown more quickly. So you sometimes need to try just making your oven a little bit cooler. It definitely, you have to play around with it. Because it's a liquid, it makes things more moist. So you can sometimes end up getting a more cakey result. And, you know, moisture activates gluten. It's a complicated thing, but I also think it's kind of a fun challenge.
Katie, you're also a fitness instructor, and you've worked for Eating Well magazine, and healthy eating is important to you. And this whole book is based on an added sweetener. So how do you square the idea of celebrating maple while also trying to eat a healthy diet?
Right. Well, that's great. Yeah. So we do need to watch our added sugars, and maple is an added sugar. None of these recipes call for more maple than your recommended daily allowance of sugar. I think if you're going to be choosing to sweeten with a sweetener, if you're going to compare them one-to-one, this one is definitely a better choice for many reasons, health being one of them. It's a lower glycemic sugar, so that means it's not going to give you the same sugar spike in your blood sugar spike. And it's also, as I mentioned, it's sweeter cup for cup, so you end up using less of it. So, you end up getting flavor and sweetness, and you have to use less of it. It also, of course, it has, it's not a refined product. So you end up, you know, with these trace minerals. It has antioxidants and it has anti-inflammatory properties. So, you know, comparing it cup for cup to white sugar is definitely a healthier choice.
All right, more maple on the way. We just heard from Jim that you actually can pair maple with sardines. That's amazing to me. And I can't wait to try that actually now. Once I've found out about it, I kind of have to try it. But if you out there have other interesting uses for maple that you want to share with us, we are all ears. And if you have questions for Katie Webster about how do I do this? How do I make a recipe? How do I substitute? What's the flavor profile of maple and how's that going to actually affect the recipe that I'm making? You can call in now. Our number is 1-800-639-2211 or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're giving some loving to maple syrup, the humble sap of the maple tree that turns into liquid gold, both in color and, I'm afraid, in price. Katie Webster is the author of a new cookbook, Maple, 100 Sweet and Savory Recipes Featuring Pure Maple Syrup. She's also a sugarer and a blogger. She's sharing her recipes, and you're sharing yours. Call 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Let's go to Jill calling in from Newark. Hi, Jill. Go ahead.
Hi. So I, like many Vermonters, am a sports enthusiast, and I will give a shout-out quickly to Jim and Donna from Morgan because we bike together. But anyway.
Jim of now Maple Sardine fame.
The Maple Sardine guy, yeah. So apparently, maple syrup has a very favorable glucose to fructose ratio, and glucose is what you want. It has more glucose, so it's absorbed more readily by your system when you're exercising. So I put in my water bottle when I'm exercising for more than an hour, either, you know, my bike bottle or my hike bottle or my Nordic ski bottle, I put in coconut water, a teaspoon or two of maple syrup, a squeeze of lime or lemon, and a dash of salt, and it is the most delicious, most palatable sports drink that I know of. It works great.
Jill, thanks. That sounds excellent, and I know of at least one company started by a former professional cyclist, Ted King, now, who's trying to use maple for athletic fuel as well. So you're in good company there for your cycling, and what a cool drink. I love a little bit of maple in seltzer water, and it's just got that nice sweetness and the flavor, and then you're talking about the benefits. Linda's calling in from West Fairley. Hi, Linda. Let's hear from you as well.
Yeah, hi. I have a comment on use of maple syrup, and also want to get your guest's reaction. We have our own sugaring operation, so we have lots of syrup to play with. A few years ago, I decided to try to develop a line of products involved pairing maple and apple. So this would be sauce, apple butter, jelly, jam. When I started out, I thought I'd just try using 100% maple syrup, and this did not work at all. The product was so cloying is the best word I can find for it. So I found that I had to back off on the maple and combine it with sugar. And when I reached a flavor that gave a hint of maple, this was the best. But it did involve more sugar than apple. I wondered what your guest has to say about this.
Thanks for the call, Linda. Katie, what do you think?
Well, maple definitely is very sweet, you know, and it needs to be balanced, I think. I love balancing it with acidic ingredients, and I found that was really important. So actually, one of the recipes that I brought to share today is an apple tort, and it's made with almonds, and I made a glaze for the top of it. And you know what I put in the glaze is actually a little bit of apple cider vinegar. And I made the glaze the first time, and it was way too sweet. And so I added in a little bit of that vinegar to sort of give it a little bit of brightness. I don't know if you can taste that, but it definitely changed the taste profile. So No, I think that's really interesting that that's what you found with your product.
I'm actually tasting, excuse me, I'm tasting that tort right now, and you can't taste the vinegar, but it does have that brightness, and it's not too sweet. I mean, most glazes are so cloyingly sweet, it's hard to eat them.
Right.
But this one is not. It does seem very bright, but definitely has that maple flavor in it.
Right, it does. And the glaze also has cinnamon in it. I didn't put the cinnamon into the cake batter because cinnamon, again, is one of those ingredients where it can overpower the maple flavor. So, you know, there's the sweet taste of the maple, but then there's the maple flavor. And so the, you know, cinnamon can be one of those competing ingredients.
We got a note from Kathy who says, my husband just finished making our favorite ice cream, spiced maple, made with dark syrup from our neighbor's woods and also cardamom, cloves, and cinnamon. Wonderful.
That sounds heavenly.
That does sound amazing, actually. And Amy says, I'm a huge fan of Katie Webster and her cookbook, Maple. I love that these recipes are healthy, seasonal, and so, so yummy. I feel good about incorporating maple, a special product from our great state, into these flavorful recipes. Cauliflower to hazelnut cookies. I can't wait to try more of Katie's recipes. She's taught me to try maple in some of my own recipes. And what inspired you to choose maple, she wants to know.
As a topic for a cookbook. Well, I mean, being a recipe developer, I've always wanted to write a cookbook, but we're backyard sugar makers. So, you know, we have a lot of maple on hand these days. We've gotten better and better at sugaring. So this past year, we made 10 gallons, actually. So it's become our go-to sweetener. And, you know, originally it was sort of like, oh, you know, when friends are around and we're sugaring, I'll make a whole menu of maple recipes. And then over the years, it became, you know, part of our daily, you know, cooking. And, you know, it became apparent to me that it was more than just a single menu for sugaring season. It was, you know, something that I could fill that whole cookbook with.
You know, that's great for you that you've got all that maple lying around, as it were, because you can use it in everything. I tried tapping my own trees this spring and it did not work. So sometimes when I look at a recipe and think, okay, well, that calls for, you know, 3/4 of a cup of maple or a cup of sugar and I could use maple, I think that's $10 just going right into that recipe. I mean, maple is so expensive. So, you know, how do you sort of balance that desire to eat locally, to use a local sweetener, to use something that perhaps has, you know, some trace elements that might be at least a little more healthy than a refined sugar, but also weighing that with the cost mm-hmm. of it?
Well, there's a few things you can do to get the most out of your maple. I almost exclusively call for the darkest available. So now it's called Dark Robust.
Right. No longer grade B.
Right. It's no longer grade B. It's the Dark Robust. So, you know, per tablespoon of maple, you're going to get the most amount of maple flavor. And then, you know, also you can buy, I know it seems sort of counterintuitive, but if you buy a larger jug of it, you know, the unit cost of it is less, and you can actually freeze. A lot of people don't know this, but you can freeze maple. So, you know, just decant what you're going to keep in the fridge and then put the rest of it in the freezer.
We did get a note from a listener named Barbara who wants to know about what difference it makes depending on which grade you're cooking with.
I always say go for the dark stuff. It you know, it has the most flavor. There's a few exceptions. You know, if you've ever tried making pure maple candy, you know that you need to use the light, the what used to be called fancy. It's now called golden. It definitely, you need to use the lighter for that. It has to do with the type of sugars that are in the different grades. But yeah, I definitely say go for the dark stuff when you can find it.
What else in your book really appeals to you? I mean, you've shared a couple of recipes with us, but what should people, you know, what else would sort of whet people's appetites?
Well, I'll tell you what we're having for dinner tonight. We're having the maple ginger chicken thighs with fresh pears. I went to the market yesterday and there was this beautiful display of pears. And I was like, oh my gosh, I need these pears. And then I was like, oh, I'll make the chicken thighs. And the chicken thighs are actually one of my favorite recipes. So I don't know if you know Silver Palette cookbook, but the, mm-hmm. the chicken marbella, it's like really famous with the prunes and the olives and all that. It's like a sweet and savory chicken recipe. It's a classic for entertaining. This was sort of my maple cookbook version of that. So you marinate the chicken for, 12 hours, 24 hours in this ginger and maple and cider mixture with shallots and thyme. And then you put it into the roasting pan with the marinade, and then you tuck slices of either apple or pear in between the chicken and then roast it. And it's heavenly, and it has so much sauce, and you can just spoon it over pilaf or whatever. And it's just a really wonderful dish to have at this time of year.
That sounds delicious. And, you know, you mentioned the pears. You also have a very ripe pear in your maple smoothie recipe,
yeah.
which is made with milk, not an ice cream smoothie, but
right.
you say it's very creamy.
Yeah.
And we got a note from Sam in Sheffield who suggests homemade white pizza with spinach, feta mozzarella, sausage, blueberries, and a maple drizzle. He says it's amazing. And Katie actually has a recipe for maple dough, pizza dough with maple
in it. A pizza dough with maple in it. And there is a pizza as well that has a drizzle of the maple on top. There's a picture of it on the back with arugula, caramelized onions. They're balsamic caramelized onions and pepitas. Yeah, it's amazing. It seems just wrong, but then when you try it, it's just delicious.
Let's go to Janet calling in from St. Albans. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I'm very much enjoying your program today. I would like to know, number one, where can we purchase the book? And do you have a salad dressing, a vinaigrette recipe that you can share?
So the book is available anywhere books are sold. It's distributed through Penguin and Random House. So, wherever anybody can get an account there, they can buy it and have it at their store. It's at Healthy Living and Phoenix Books in Burlington. And I do have some salad dressings. There's several of them, actually. There's a maple balsamic, of course, but there's also orange miso, a grainy mustard, and there's actually even a maple ranch dressing as well.
And tip for somebody who just wants to put the maple into the vinaigrette, I mean, they can get the actual recipe in your book, mm-hmm. but anything you should know about how to do that?
Oh, just adding a tablespoon or two definitely balances out the acidity in the vinegar. I usually add a little, allium of some sort, a little Dijon. It works wonderful.
And there's a maple vinaigrette that I make that actually then I pour over new potatoes that have been roasted on the grill. So really good as sort of a marinade for mm-hmm. vegetables.
Absolutely.
As well.
And it gets along well with mustard as well. So
yeah.
Adding that in.
Katie Webster is the author of the cookbook Maple, 100 Sweet and Savory Recipes Featuring Maple Syrup. And we have her recipes for smoky and sweet turkey chili and maple apple almond tort, both of which I can attest to. They're on our website, go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition. Katie, thank you so much for sharing your maple thoughts with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up, State Senator Ginny Lyons joins us to give voice to the concerns she and some other Vermont lawmakers have about the Trans-Pacific trade deal President Obama has been working on. You're listening to Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Many Vermont lawmakers had concerns over the multinational Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement as it was being crafted this summer. On October 5th, participating nations agreed to the TPP. That does not mean it's in effect. All of the countries will have to ratify it individually, and that could take a couple of years. But some lawmakers say they're still concerned. We're going to check in now with Chittenden County State Senator Ginny Lyons. Senator Lyons, nice to have you back on the program.
Thanks, Jane. It's a pleasure to be here.
So there are things that you're worried about, and there are things that have left you very frustrated about the process. So we're going to talk about both. This trade agreement has been being negotiated for several years now, and you told VPR in 2013 that you were worried that specific state regulations around tobacco marketing and sales in Vermont might be compromised by this trade agreement. In the end, tobacco has been carved out of the agreement as you were hoping it would be, so that, the Vermont regulations will not be subject to problems with this trade deal. Did that eliminate your biggest concern?
It eliminated one of them, which was exactly as you've indicated, but there remain others. The trade agreements are done behind closed doors, and we still do not know what's in the full text. We only know what has been leaked by different folks. So we're still concerned. We're most concerned about what it means for our local regulations, our what's known as sub-central. So those things at the state level, those things in our municipalities or towns. And what will it mean for land use and zoning if, for example, one of the 9,000 multinational corporations expects to be treated in a specific way, in one way, and comes to a town in Vermont and finds that there are environmental or other regulations that they have questions about, they can seek, they have cause in the trade tribunal. So we're concerned about that. We're also concerned about whether or not there is information in the TPP regarding procurement, so local food-to-table programs that we might have, or perhaps
Stop you there, Senator Lyons.
Sure.
What would be the issue there in the trade agreement that would be problematic for Vermont and for farm-to-table food movements?
If there's a restriction on any restriction whatsoever on procurement, local procurement, that a small business in Vermont or any of our local hospitals or schools are buying food from locally, a large multinational food provider might find that as what's known as an indirect expropriation, or what's that the company might suggest that there's an advantage being given to the local folks over the larger company.
So, for example, if there was something in the trade deal that suggested that large organizations like a hospital should have to go with a lowest bidder, something like that?
It could be that. There won't be that. I don't think there'll be that specificity. But the as we have looked at what's been leaked out, the expectations of how they should be treated is what these larger corporations, multinational corporations, will be looking at. So it's not even as specific as you're saying. It's more of a general statement. It's a little bit scary when you think about it, that it could affect, as we understand it, could affect things like land use and zoning, forest products, health care, some of our timber policies, our health and safety policies, could all be brought into question. Now, obviously, it's not, we don't know. So clearly we don't know. But from what we've heard from folks who have seen leaked portions or the portions of the trade agreement that we've read that have been leaked, there's real cause for concern.
So is this worst-case scenario thinking, or is it realistic to think that...
No, I think it's realistic. The dispute process, which is known as ISDS, it's a tribunal process where companies appeal local laws or federal laws. The tribunal process occurs outside. The challenge process occurs outside of our court system, so outside of the federal court or state court system. And in the 1960s, this tribunal system was started for free trade. There were 50 cases in 30 years. In each year, 2011 through 2013, each year there were 50 cases. So we've seen an increase in the number of challenges to local regulations or state sub-central regulations on a global basis. That is the concern. So it's not so much that we know these things are going to happen, but we're seeing that the challenges are being made more and more frequently, and the challenges are being successful.
And that goes to one of the frustrations that you and others have had with this negotiation, that it has been so secretive that lawmakers at the state and the national level have not been able to see the trade agreement, but that some multinational corporations have been involved in crafting it. We just have a couple seconds left, but what needs to be done moving forward to protect Vermont's interests?
Well, I think what needs to be done for Vermont is, you know, our congressional delegation is very savvy in this area. They've worked very hard. Our state folks have worked very hard to build strong relationships with other countries in selling our agricultural and our value-added products. I think that needs to continue. Beyond that, I think we each need to ask for a more transparent process and to ask that these outside appeals not continue. We need to have our democracy preserved as it is. We don't need a new layer over our democracy that excludes our small businesses in our state and only includes the large multinational corporations.
That's Ginny Lyons. She's a Democratic state senator representing Chittenden County, and she's been talking with us about her concerns over the multinational Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement, the TPP. Senator Lyons, thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Jane. It's been a pleasure.
VPR's music video project, Live from the Fort, recently welcomed the band The Sweet Remains into the VPR performance studio. The band is a trio of singers that focuses on harmonies and songwriting, featuring Rich Price, Greg Naughton, and Brian Chartrand. They live in totally different time zones. Rich is the one with the Vermont connections. But their long-distance collaboration has yielded 3 studio albums, including their latest, called Night Songs. Here is The Sweet Remains with the song Takes Time.
Starting again takes time. Losing a friend that was hard to find. Trying to forget all those nights. It takes time.
The way that we typically write is that someone will present an idea. I mean, if we're fortunate to be in the same room, then we can start working on it immediately. But typically, someone will email a scrap with a question and then get some ideas down, and so that's how the conversation kind of starts. It's a lot of back and forth over email and video chat.
This hole you left inside my heart, starting again takes time. Losing a friend that was hard to find. Trying to forget all those nights.
We collaborated with just an amazing producer named Andy Zula.
Because we all have different styles of writing and we all kind of write about different things, we were fortunate to work with a producer that helped, you know, wrap it all up.
Friends all say I'm better off. River was too wide to cross. Times I'm better than I seem, but those are few and far between. Starting again takes time. Losing a friend that was hard to find. Trying to forget all those nights. It takes time. Time moves so slowly.
Time moves so slow.
You're just marking time.
Ooh.
We were so easy.
Won't you?
There was you and I,
you and I,
you and I,
you and I. And I would say this record, more than the previous records, has a lot of co-writes. So I think that's one of the things I like about this record, is that there's a stronger through line of connective tissue between the three of us. I think it's the best thing we've ever done, and I'm really excited about it.
Write a song to get it out. The record's in an empty house now. Starting again takes time. Losing a friend that was hard to find. Trying to forget all those nights takes time. Takes time.
The song is Takes Time, and it's by The Sweet Remains, Rich Price, Greg Naughton, and Brian Chartrand. That was from a session they played with Jeff Carestis on bass and Brad Wentworth on percussion for VPR's Live from the Fort music video series. Go to vpr.net to watch the four-song set. Businessman Bruce Lisman is one of two Republicans who've entered the Vermont 2016 gubernatorial race. He'll be our guest tomorrow. We'll hear why Lisman thinks he's the best person for the job and what his priorities are for leading the state. Send your comments or questions for Bruce Lisman to Vermont Edition at vpr.net and listen tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri and Sam Gail Rosen, with production assistance from Aaron Lucy. Mary Williams directed the program, and our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.